Save big on your Labor Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app.
Buy one, get one free on our full line sale of delicious fresh Tyson chicken with your card. Then get 6 ounce packs of juicy raspberries or blackberries for $1.67 each with your card and a digital coupon.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I walk a straight line, shackled and chained. Oh, gruesome Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hill String Gang, Rango the Three.
Welcome back to Bloody
Angola,
a podcast 142 years in the making.
Complete story of America's bloodiest prison.
And I'm Jim Chapman. And
I'm Woody Overton.
Hey, we're both talking on this thing
right
today.
Back in the saddle. Right?
Back in effect.
Yep.
As they say. And we got a wild story for you today regarding a case in Louisiana that got a ton of national attention. Mm-hmm. When it originally came out, we're going to jump right into it and take you to Faraday, Louisiana.
Yes.
Now, Faraday is a very small town, y'all, located in Concordia Parish, Louisiana. And at this time in 2007, it had a population of around 1,500 people. Mm-hmm. We're going to take you to the home of John and Geraldine Wood on the night of March 14th, 2007. And it's early in the morning, 2:55 a.m. David Cobb, an employee in the communications department of the Concordia Parish Sheriff's Office, he gets a phone call from a young man, and he's stating that someone broke in his house and shot his parents, and he thought his parents were dead. So that young man informed Cobb that he had shot the intruder, but he thought that the intruder might be still alive. Cobb then contacts the Faraday Police Department and provided the details to a Lieutenant John Hawkins and a dispatcher by the name of Albert White. When Cobb returned to that phone conversation with the young man, he was informed by the caller that he shot the intruder again and that he was dead.
Right.
So Cobb kept the young man on the phone and informed him the police were on the way and ended the call when Hawkins arrived at the scene. The young man turned out to be 15-year-old Connor Wood.
Right. And put it in context for y'all real quick. Faraday is just right across the Mississippi River from Natchez, Mississippi, about in the middle of the state, real small town. So this didn't happen there a lot. It's a big farming community mostly, right? So anyway, Lieutenant Hawkins and Lieutenant Derek Freeman arrived at the residence, and Hawkins saw Woods walking out from the carport area with a cell phone in his hand. And Hawkins described Woods as sort of hysterical upon his arrival. And Freeman described Woods as nervous, as if he had something on his mind. And Woods told Hawkins that his mother and father were inside the residence and that the intruder had entered the room and he shot the intruder down in the hallway. For officer safety, and this is standard procedure, they pat frisked him and put him, secured him in the back of the unit, till they figure out what's going on, right? I mean, they don't even know that the intruder this guy's talking about is dead or alive. So Hawkins and Freeman secure the perimeter of the house because, again, they don't know if he's alive, the bad guy or alleged bad guy. And Deputy Jack Fletcher arrived on the scene, and he approached Woods and asked what had happened. Woods told Fletcher that he heard two shots while he was in his bedrooms, and he went and retrieved a weapon from under the mattress in his parents' bedroom and then met an intruder in the hall whom he shot. Okay, so Woods said he told the 911 dispatcher that the intruder was still moving around and asked the dispatcher if he could shoot again. Woods stated, Woods stated he then shot the intruder again. Woods told Fletcher that after he shot the intruder, he went to his father's vehicle to retrieve another weapon.
Yeah, so Fletcher then walks away, and he looks in the back door of the residence, and he sees a person lying in the hallway. Fletcher noticed that the back door was open, a window was shattered, and there was glass on the floor inside the residence, and a bunch of glass fragments right. also outside the residence. There was also a jacket on the ground in the front door with glass fragments in it. He waited for backup, and when deputies Weber and Lawrence arrived, the three of them entered the house. The person in the hallway was lying face down with no signs of life. Wood's mother and father were in their bed with no signs of life. Two emergency medical technicians arrived and confirmed that all three individuals were deceased. Yeah. Fletcher then asked the EMTs to check Woods for injuries, and Woods told Fletcher that he needed to tell him something. Fletcher tells Woods that he needed to secure the residence and that the investigator would be there in a minute. But Woods blurted out, "Well, we had taken the guns out to shoot them last weekend, so my fingerprints will be all over the guns in my house." According to Deputy Fletcher, at this point, Woods seemed normal and did not appear upset.
Right, and that's I can tell you again around Miranda later on in this case. That's an excited utterance he made. So Fletcher then returned to the rear door and realized that only the outer pane of glass was broken. He observed a hammer on the bar stool near the glass door and a 9mm pistol on the bar between the refrigerator and the entrance to the dining room. The gun had a round in the chamber and several in the magazine. And the body, the person Woods pointed out as the intruder and later identified as Woods' neighbor, 16-year-old Matthew Whittington, was found in a hallway with empty shell casings, both 22 and 32 caliber around him. He had neoprene camouflage gloves on his hands, and there were multiple 9mm casings found throughout the bedroom where Woods' parents' bodies were found, with a bullet in the wall behind the headboard of the bed. There was an empty magazine from a 9mm pistol laying on the floor between the night table and the bed, and the 22 caliber rifle and the 32 caliber pistol were found on Woods' bed, right? So, I mean, it's like an arsenal in this house. The 32 caliber pistol still had the magazine in it, but it was empty. And the 22 caliber rifle had a live round in the chamber and rounds in the magazine. Now, police do what they do, and they start working the scene. Police dusted for fingerprints on the door and in the bar area. And the only print that had ridge details was on the door. But when lifted, it had no identified ridge detail on. Y'all, people think you can get fingerprints off anything. Even if you could see it, a lot of times you can't lift it, right? But investigators then checked other exterior doors and windows and found no sign of entry into the home. So police collected seven 32 caliber casings and two 22 caliber casings laying near Matthew's body and two 32 caliber casings in a nearby bathroom and a total of 13 9mm casings inside Mr. and Mrs. Wood's bedroom. It's crazy. Five bullet fragments were recovered from each of the bodies of Wood's parents, and 9 bullet fragments were recovered from Matthew's body. And a cell phone and gloves were removed from Matthew's body at the funeral home for the autopsy, y'all. That's standard collecting evidence. Police then proceeded to the Whittington home, where they informed Mr. and Mrs. Whittington that their son had been shot and killed. Mr. Whittington began calling his son's name and attempted to enter into Matthew's bedroom, but was unable to do so. The Whittingtons explained that their house was being renovated and that Matthew secured his doors with poles when he went to bed. Now, Mr. Whittington entered his son's room by going outside and raising the window. And once inside Matthew's room, police observed Matthew's wallet and a leg and knee brace on the top bunk bed. They also saw crutches inside the room. The police asked the Whittingtons about the crutches and brace and were told that Matthew had a knee injury and was not supposed to be walking, and he needed the brace and the crutches when he was walking. So before we go any further, let's cover some of the people that we just mentioned so you can get a grasp of who they're starting with Connor Wood's family, okay? So Connor's mother, Geraldine, one of the victims, was a full-time mom who homeschooled her son Connor. She was described as running a very tight ship at home. His dad, John, worked out of town a lot for a water company and typically would not have been home on a Wednesday night when this happened. But something occurred at work that allowed him to be home early that week. Now, Connor has an older brother as well who was off at college at Louisiana Tech in Ruston. That's far north Louisiana. During the incident, and the only people at home at the time were his mother, Mary, his father, John, and Connor and Matthew Whittington, right? And three out of four of those were deceased. So Matthew Whittington, as we said, was Connor's neighbor, and Connor would later describe Matthew as his best friend. Now, because Connor was homeschooled, he didn't have a lot of friends, and he and Matthew were tight. The neighborhood they grew up in was upper middle class, and the majority of the kids went to a private school. And this was 2007, y'all. Not many people were homeschooled at that time compared to today after COVID and all. Now, as we told you, Connor called the police. However, it's important to note that he called the non-emergency line, which means that call was not recorded. However, the original operator transferred the call to the Concordia Sheriff's Office in that aspect of the call was recorded. This will become critical later on in the story.
So police, they process the scene and they haul Connor off to the police station and they conduct an interview. And here's where it gets a little bit strange to me. Originally, when they sit down, Connor's informed that the interview is going to be recorded. And he objects to that. He says he's not comfortable with the interview being recorded. So the police actually agree not to record at that moment. And for 35 minutes, they talk with no official record. So what are your thoughts on that, Woody?
Like I said, I mean, it doesn't really mean dick. He didn't say, I want an attorney. He just said, I'm not comfortable with being recorded. So you can talk all day long. And whatever he told him is totally admissible. And I mean, be honest with you, hundreds of interrogations I've done, a lot of them I didn't even record until after they started confessing.
Yeah, because it's not hearsay, right? Because it's coming from you, right? Testifying, right? Against, hey, Connor told me this.
Exactly.
So you don't have to have it recorded. Right. I find that interesting. Now, we do know what was said because the judge at that trial, just like I just told you, they allowed the evidence to be admissible, the confession to be admissible that we're going to get into with Connor and one of the detectives, and basically they just had the detective take the stand, right? And yeah, they asked him questions.
Yeah, but this is about the unrecorded
interview. Correct. Interview. Yes. Yeah. So in that aspect of the interview that was recorded, Connor started to talk. He said his parents argued a bunch and that he was dreading his dad coming home at the end of the week. And when he was talking to Matthew Whittington about how his parents argued about a month and a half prior to the incident, it was Matthew that suggested they should kill him.
Yeah.
So Connor goes on to say that he was shocked when Matthew said that, but Matthew wouldn't let it go, he said. He said that every time they got around each other, he would bring it up. And according to Connor, Matthew even came up with a plan on how they would do it. He said that after that occurred so many times, he actually started believing it would be okay to kill his parents.
Yeah, you could tell this guy's a legal genius, right?
Right. Hey, y'all. Podcasting about Louisiana's most notorious prison takes a ton of energy, and feeding my body and my brain with farm fresh, never frozen ingredients is as important to my process in podcasting as telling the story itself. That's why I choose HelloFresh. We all know home-cooked meals are so much better for you, but you don't always have time to pull it off. But with HelloFresh handling all the meal planning, shopping, and most of the prep, it's easier than ever to get dinner on the table quick and painless. No more endless recipe searching or spending money on whole jars of spices for only a pinch. With HelloFresh, everything you need to make delicious meals comes right to your door, pre-portioned and fresh. Plus, the included step-by-step recipe cards make cooking simple. I love opening that box and everything I need is right there inside. I eat healthier, save time, and actually enjoy cooking dinner because HelloFresh makes it so easy. I tried out the bruschetta chicken last week and was blown away by the taste. I mean flavor-filled. You gotta try it. For free breakfast for life, go to HelloFresh.com/FreeBloodyAngola. One free breakfast item per box while subscription is active. That's free breakfast for life just by going to HelloFresh.com/FreeBloodyAngola. HelloFresh is America's number one meal kit.
Save big on your Labor Day barbecue. All in the Kroger app.
Buy one, get one free on our full line sale of delicious fresh Tyson chicken with your card. Then get 6 ounce packs of juicy raspberries or blackberries for $1.67 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So in the midst of Connor and Matthew discussing all of this, John Connor's dad has his truck broken into. You know, John was known to carry two guns in his truck, but ever since the break-in incident, he would carry the guns into the house when he got home. And Connor had mentioned that to Matthew, and he stated in the police interview that Matthew suggested that they could just use his dad's guns to kill his dad since they would be in the house now. Now, during the interview, Connor said he had called Matthew, and Matthew said that tonight is the night. And Matthew responded that he would have to wait until his parents were asleep so he could sneak out, right? Legal geniuses.
Yeah, and they're also 15 and 16. Right. You know,
if this is even true. But later that night, Matthew didn't show up. So Connor called him again to see what's up, right? He's like, you know, we're gonna do this. This is according to Connor. And Matthew said he would be there in just a few minutes. So they according to Connor, they meet in Connor's backyard. And Connor claimed that the original plan was for him to shoot his parents. He said the plan was for him to shoot them, and while he was doing that, Matthew would break out the window to make it appear as if a break-in had occurred. And then Connor would hand Matthew the gun, and Matthew would haul ass back to his house with the murder weapon, and Connor would call the police and claim that he woke up to gunshots.
And actually, all this crazy plan, that was, I mean, if you're going to do that, getting rid of the murder weapon, definitely smart. And that was one aspect of the plan that he actually probably put some thought into and was an okay plan. Hey, I'm going to give you the murder weapon after I kill him, and you bring it to your house and police won't find it. But as you probably already know, it didn't go as planned. Mm-hmm. So they go into the house. And this is obviously, y'all, this is all from Connor's confession because Matthew is dead.
Right.
So
dead man can't talk.
He can't talk. He can't talk. So according to Connor, they go into the house and Connor starts getting cold feet. He expresses this to Matthew. And according to Connor, Matthew starts getting pissed. And he starts saying, man, we planned this for so long, stuff like that. And Connor tells Matthew, I am not saying I don't want him killed. I just don't want to be the one to do it. And according to Connor, Matthew said, hey, man, no worries. I'll do it for you.
What a good buddy.
So Connor goes to his room and sits there while Matthew gets the gun from where Connor's dad kept it in the kitchen and heads to Connor's parents' bedroom and just starts unloading.
Yeah, somebody was unloading with all the shell casings, right? So Connor says he's sitting in his bedroom and waiting on it to happen. And in his own words, when he hears the shooting start, he freaks out.
I bet he did.
Right? And said he could not believe what he had done. Remorse. The gunshots end, and Matthew walks into Connor's bedroom, again, according to Connor, to let him know he was on the way to break the window to make it look like a break-in. Right?
Makes sense.
Okay. So sticking to the plan, I guess.
Yeah.
So Connor says he starts freaking out, and he goes down the hall to get the gun he knew his mom had kept under a mattress. He grabs it, and I'm sure took note of his parents' bullet-ridden bodies in the process.
It's under a mattress.
How much sense does that have? Again, we're dealing with a legal genius. He goes in the room, doesn't talk about his parents being shot to shit, but he's got to get this pistol for whatever reason, right? I don't know. Anyway, he grabs it, and he goes back out in the hallway as Matthew was heading back down the hallway, and there they are face to face, and both of them have guns. Remember that Matthew got the one while he had it already, supposedly to do the shooting, and Connor went and got the one from underneath the mattress.
Right, and it's important to note that Matthew was returning down that hallway after breaking a window to make it appear like a break-in, right? But get this, y'all. Get this. This genius, he breaks the window from the inside of the house. Mm-hmm. And that's what Woody Everton would call a clue.
It's so stupid. So many people have arrested, and they're like, oh, it's a break-in. And I'm like, I bet the glass is broken from the inside, not the outside.
Yeah.
And it's just obvious. So.
Yeah. And at that point in the hallway, Connor said he just emptied that gun into Matthew. He then goes into his room and he calls police. Now, let's get back to that 911 call. In that call, Connor said, there's an intruder and I shot him and he's still moving.
Right.
Can I shoot him again?
Right.
And according to Connor, the operator told him yes. But what's left out in that call, and conveniently that's not recorded. Right. That was before the call was transferred to the sheriff's office. Right. But what is left out in that conversation to the operator was that he went in and got a second gun, a .22 caliber rifle. Remember what he told you? There were .22 and .32 caliber shells around Matthew's body.
Right.
And he fired two more shots into Matthew in the back of the head.
That is an execution.
Totally. And when police asked Connor, why did he do that? He said he didn't know. But he said, my dad constantly put me down, and he felt like his dad went out of his way to embarrass him in front of people and make fun of him. And he said he also has resentment towards his mom because she was so strict and would not let him do a lot of things, being a parent.
Yeah, but that doesn't say why you shot Matthew in the back of the head two times.
Yeah.
He's talking about what his parents did to him, not what Matthew did, right?
Well, at that point, he said he just freaked out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, so, what comes next? He got his ass got arrested, right? And
they charged, the right to remain silent.
Yeah, right. And they charged him with 3 counts of first-degree murder, which is absolutely available for the death penalty in Louisiana. But this, y'all came after approximately 10 hours of questioning. And let's talk about that for a second. I always said, and I trained the young detectives on a homicide case, the true good interrogation doesn't even begin to after 5 hours. Somebody you're trying to get the truth out of, the juice out of, because you got to wear them down. You got to establish a thing. You go through the story, you get them to lock them into the story. And then you go back and you pick apart what pieces of the story are shitty, right? And then you get them to change the story again. And that's so 10 hours, you know, it sounds like a long time, but honestly, it's not. I've questioned people for a hell of a lot longer. But now we're going to take you to March 17, 2007, which is 3 days after the incident, and the detective on the case receives a call from Connor. And Connor states that he needed to speak to him because, just like I told y'all, he had not been completely honest on his official statement to police. And here we go. And I have this happen so many times after sitting in the jail cell for a while, they think, oh, fuck, no such thing as a perfect crime, right? Especially a genius like this. So now he's got to change his statement. Mm. So he changed his statement. He said that when he told Matthew he did not want to be the one to kill them, he was lying. And that he actually told Matthew he did not want them dead at all. Then he said when Matthew got the guns, he begged him not to do it. And they went to Connor's room, and somehow Matthew convinced Connor to be the one to shoot his parents. Change the story, right? So in this version, Connor tells the detective he was actually the one that killed them. And the reason he killed Matthew after was because he was mad that Matthew talked him into it. He's figuring everything is that they're tearing it apart. And you know what? I'm just telling them that I did it, but Matthew talked me into it, right?
Yeah.
Your parents say when you're a kid, little Johnny does it. Well, little Johnny jumped off the Mississippi Bridge. Would you do it too?
Right. Yeah.
So anyway, Connor gets a court-appointed lawyer, and you can't just get a court-appointed lawyer, a regular court-appointed lawyer. You have to be certified to defend a death penalty case, and there's not that many.
For the death penalty?
Well, it's first degree murder. So
yeah.
The death penalty is certainly on the table. So the judge is probably not going to assign them. They can't assign them. They have to be, the defense lawyer has to be certified to work death penalty cases.
Right.
And most people don't know about that. But anyway, so he gets his court-appointed lawyer, and the trial for the case is, of course, coming up, but it takes a long time. Even though he was 15 at this time, and at the time of the murder when he was charged, they charged him as an adult, y'all, and a grand jury was convened, and they get a true bill. Now, let's talk about that. So they have way more than enough probable cause to arrest him, and because his shitty statements, and he's changing his statements and all that. So you arrest him on probable cause. And normally, if it wasn't a first-degree murder case or second-degree murder case, you would have to go on the witness stand and have a probable cause hearing where the defense basically gets to find out everything, all the reasons you arrested their client. It's basically like a free shot for them to get their client off. And the judge has to say, yeah, I found probable cause for this warrant of what he got, right? Yeah. But on a case like this, they don't do that. You take it straight to the grand jury. And it has to go to the grand jury. And 12 people, they say it's a secret meeting, but it's 12 people you tell your story to, and they decide whether or not there's enough evidence and to proceed with the murder charges.
Right.
Or they can throw it out. I mean, and that's the true bill means, we think you are guilty or not. You definitely have enough to go to trial.
Yeah.
It's not a guilty verdict, but it's simply saying you have enough to go to trial.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty much the first step.
Yep. So, in the state of Louisiana, you hear about all these California and New York and all these murder trials taking 6 months and 4 months and shit like that. That doesn't happen in Louisiana. I never have one that went over 10 days, right? But that's because in Louisiana, it takes so long to get the fucking case to trial. Yeah, they do all the motions. They do a motion. Like Courtney Coco's case, shit, we had like 2 years of motions before it finally got to trial. Wow. But and that's happens in this case too. So in March of 2008, nearly a year after the murders, the trial starts. And this the state gets up to present their case. And they focused a lot, naturally, on the forensic evidence, especially as it related to Matthew, who, as we told you, was riddled with bullets, and with only one of those bullets being fired into his body, right?
Yeah, and I think that shows intent to kill.
Yeah.
If it was really an intruder and you shoot him, and then obviously that person has turned around at this point, if you continue to shoot them, this wasn't a 15-year-old kid who was just scared, and he fires the gun, and then the guy runs off.
You got the forensic evidence to of him shooting him twice in the back of the head. Mm-hmm. I mean, and if I'm not mistaken, that was a .22 rifle, so you got to walk up and literally touch to his head, boom, boom, after all the other bullet holes, and only one, which was in the front of his body.
Right.
So,
Very good point.
He shot the shit out of him. Matthew's defense, like I told you, is the legal genius, not. So it was really no defense. And when the state rested their case, I'm sure it was really well put together. The defense called no witnesses. You know, you don't have to.
No. I got to say, that surprised me.
I've had a couple of times, and it never worked out for them. But when the defense doesn't call any witnesses, that's because they're going to say, Your Honor, the prosecution didn't prove its case. They're going to say that in a closing. Your Honor, or jury, they didn't prove their case, but we didn't even have to put on any witnesses, right?
Yeah.
Because they didn't prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. Not beyond all shadow of a doubt, but beyond a reasonable doubt. Well, guess what? They did. So, they didn't call any witnesses. And the jury sent out, they do closing arguments. The jury sent out and takes them 25 minutes.
Wow. I can't eat lunch in 25 minutes.
When the jury sent out, the first thing you got to do is pick a jury foreman. They got to vote on who's going to be the jury foreman. So that's 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And so then they're going to say, okay, we'll do our initial vote. We'll pass around the ballots. And so it comes back first time. Guilty as fuck, right? Yeah. So in 25 minutes, y'all, he was in that. The only thing you can get, but they took the death penalty off the table, obviously. So it's automatically life sentences, and he got 3 consecutive life sentences for the murder of his parents and his best friend. Now let's talk about consecutive and concurrent. Consecutive means he got a life sentence, and he died, and he came back to life. They would lock him up again, and so are the second the consecutive sentence. If he died that time and came back to life, he still got to serve. They run back to back to back. Where concurrent sentences, that means you get sentenced that life sentence all 3 of them at the same time.
Yeah,
to run concurrent. So that's kind of a nut. Some murder cases, so like burglaries or whatever. Oh, we sentenced you to, let's say there's 3 different victims. We sentenced you to 10 years on each count of burglary to run concurrent. Well, that means you're only going to do the 10 years.
Right.
Right. But if they sentence you 10 years, three times consecutive, you're doing 30 years.
Yeah, and I noticed in there that, in many of you may notice that these were life sentences that were not the death penalty. And I can only opine here, but I would think that the state, because of his age, Absolutely. He was 15, you're rolling the dice big time with a death penalty. Because if you're seeking the death penalty, it's got to be unanimous.
Right.
At that time.
Right.
And, so 12 out of 12, you're rolling the dice with a 15-year-old because there's a big likelihood that someone out of those 12 is going to say he's 15. Mm-hmm. I can't sentence him to death. You know, even though what he did was so horrific.
They're going to relate it back to their own kids or how dumb, much of a dumbass they were at 15 and all that. So you're right. And when they took the death penalty off the table, had they not taken it off the table, it'd have been a totally different thing. They would have put on, I believe they would have put on witnesses or tried to do something.
Yeah.
And the, or especially like they always do, the, you know, saying mentally he was abused. He had to listen to his parents fight all the time. They would have put up shrinks that evaluated him, done all the shit. And then if it was death penalty, you have the second phase of the trial, which is, you know, the first one, he already got found guilty, three counts, right? Then the penalty phase of the trial is where they actually, then they get to hear all the evidence they didn't get to hear, you know, prior or anything brought in. And they, you know, the defense gets to put up all this bullshit and psychiatrist. So I think he's, you know, suffering from this and this may have happened and whatever the fuck. Right.
Right.
But it didn't happen in this case. So, and the 15-year-old deal is a very, very real deal on the taking the death penalty off the table.
Yeah. So, so off he went. He turned, and when he turned 18, he gets transferred to big boy prison.
Yep.
And that was Louisiana State Penitentiary at Angola. That's right. And in 2018, get this, he actually got a shot at parole a full decade later, after he had been convicted. So legislation that was passed by the Supreme Court in Louisiana gave juvenile offenders being sentenced to life without parole a shot at a hearing to see if they qualified for release. And way back many episodes ago, we actually had an interview with the very first juvenile lifer ever released under that new legislation.
Yep, we sure did. I'm really well put together guy now.
Yeah,
yeah. Helps out a lot of people.
He does indeed. And Connor's case, however, his sentence was affirmed and he continues to be located to this day at Bloody Angola. And you know, horrific. You shot and killed not only both of your parents, but your best friend.
They did. If he had been 17, 18, he'd have got the death penalty, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
And so that again, this ruling hadn't come down yet. So back then the judge and the jury members, the prosecutor feels, okay, we don't have to worry about the death penalty. We're going to lock this dude away for the rest of his life because life means life in Louisiana. Now they come back and they change this. If you're sentenced as a juvenile, you have a shot at parole.
Yeah.
And I think that's good and bad, but the parole board ultimately has to be the one to make the decisions on letting them out. Obviously, the first guy released under this new law or to be able to, basically release. And he had been convicted for murder and sentenced to life as a juvenile. And now he's out. He's married to a doctor. He's got a wife and kids. And he has the nonprofit organization where they help prisoners that are long-term prisoners transition back into being productive member societies in these halfway houses, whatever you want to call them. But look, they take them everything from open a checking account to driver's license to help them find employment. And the recidivism rate for that program is very, very low.
Very low. I mean, and, you know, they help them assimilate.
Yeah.
Regardless of what you think about that on one side or the other, these people are getting out.
Right.
And when they get out, they
got no tools.
It is in everybody's best interest to have someone there that can work with them and help them onto their path to a better life
and a new life. And they don't just take anybody into the program.
Right.
This program, pretty much everybody's employed there, or long-time convicts that got out.
Yeah.
So they go back into Angola when they're up for the parole or they make the parole, whatever, and they're like, they could tell convicts, tell if you, it's not 100%, but a convict can tell a convict, right?
Yeah.
Or if you're going to be an inmate when you get back out and still show your ass. And if they screen very hard for that, and the ones that they help get out, thank God, like 98 or 99% of them stay out and are productive members of society.
That's right. So, that's right.
Anyway, so, that's crazy.
That was the Connor Wood story. And I don't remember who made a recommendation that we do that story, but someone messaged us a good while back about it.
Appreciate y'all.
So thank you.
Sending it in. You can continue to send in your stories. We'll talk about this time of the year. And that's when the nominations for People's Choice Podcast of the Year Awards come out. And the Real Life for Crime, I'm not accepted. I've won it all. I was blessed enough. The All Lifers and Bloody Angola fans. Bloody Angola won it last year. Best history podcast in the world, right? Yep. And but it's very important. And I want to mention that the Jim Chapman's show,
Exposed,
Scandalous Files of the Elite. And y'all go listen to it. It's super. You take mostly of the ones that are the hottest cases and about the most famous people.
It's what I call elite members of society. So, actors, high political figures, high ranking political figures, or people that are trusted members of society. So teachers, police officers. Right. And there's some wild shit that goes on in that world. Look, those P. Diddy podcasts that I put out are absolutely on fire and have been on fire since the day I dropped them. And I've done 5 episodes on Diddy. That's a wild dude. Yeah. But
congratulations on the success of the podcast. Your brainchild, right?
It's just fun to do.
Well, it's fun to do, and it's what the people are looking for. You hit on all these high-profile cases, and I don't know why people care so much more about a famous person committing a crime than a regular person. I guess it's just more news.
Intrigue.
Yeah. I think, you know what? Maybe a little bit jealousy, and they want to have P. Diddy's life. Until now, they don't.
Yeah, I don't want his life knowing what I know now. I'd like his billion dollars, but that's
exactly,
what.
Exactly. So anyway, People's Choice Podcast, Year of the Award, Exposed Scandalous Files of the Elite is up and been nominated.
Yeah, it was nominated for Best Storyteller in a Drama Series.
Yes.
So it's easy to figure out. You go to podcastawards.com, you sign up, you check the little box saying to vote in the finals. And then it'll bring you to the voting page, and you can scroll down to Best Storyteller in a Drama Series. And when you hit the little arrow, you'll see Exposed in there with some other podcasts.
Right.
Click Exposed if you don't mind. Right, you know, what I love about it, what Woody's loved about this awards show since its inception, is that it's the vote of the fans. It's not some guy who is on a panel somewhere with 6 other guys, and they're picking everybody. It's all based off
the people. And so when you go to the page, it'll ask you, are you a podcaster, a listener, or both? And very important, y'all. Exposed will make the finals. And when they make the finals, they will send you an email from the email that you voted from, asking you if you check that box, if you want to be a finalist judge. And that's huge, because it's the people that ultimately bring this home. Now, I get offered every year of these other platforms for the awards, and I don't do it because it's like Jim said, it's not, I don't want to say political, but it's not the people.
It's just a panel.
I want you to win it. I think it's a worthy one. You know, the very first People's Choice Award I ever won was Drama and Storytelling. I won it 3 years in a row also. But the eight months after Real Life for Crime, or 5 months after Real Life for Crime was started, I was nominated for Drama and Storytelling, and won it that year in 2019 or whenever it was. So it's a great honor. It validates what you do. Y'all, if you haven't listened to podcasts, go listen to it. I'm sure most of y'all have.
We've learned a couple of them on the Real Life Real Crime feed. And,
yeah,
stuff like that. Yeah. So
best of luck and love it. And
go vote.
Go vote. Go vote.
Go vote. If you're looking for a link, go to the Exposed on Facebook's on the Facebook and you'll find a link in there. I posted
some awesome. And we're going to bring that one home for sure.
Yep.
Right.
All right. Any final thoughts? What do
you have? I just love it. Appreciate each and every one of y'all. Patreon members. Thank you. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. Y'all listen, if you like Bloody Angola, you're not a Patreon member, if you can afford to be one, it's not much. Go to patreon.com, type in Bloody Angola, or Jim has the links.
Yeah,
to do it, but it's so many different tiers and so many different benefits you get, including commercial free, early releases, all the bonus episodes. And to be honest with you, Bloody Angola has probably more bonus episodes than Real Life Real Crime Original does, and he gets them out there. You know, you can get gifts and what have you. So check it out and take your Bloody Angola to a whole new level.
That's right. And until next time, I'm Jim Chapman.
And I'm Woody Everton.
Your host of Bloody
Angola.
A podcast 142 years in the making.
Complete story of America's bloodiest prison.
Peace.
I walk a straight line, shackle and chain. Oh, gruesome Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hill String Gang, Wrangler 3.
Save big on your Labor Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app.
Buy one, get one free on our full line sale of delicious fresh Tyson chicken with your card. Then get 6-ounce packs of juicy raspberries or blackberries for $1.67 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.